You're with another episode from the Stellar Sound podcast, and I'm your host for today, Radina. Today we're going to be speaking with a very interesting band. I think at least very interesting, because I personally was not before a big fan of black metal in particular, but other types of metal. And then I heard a song of theirs and I thought, okay, I can vibe with that. So we're going to be speaking with Darko, right? Or how do you pronounce Dachas, or is it?
So it's Dachas. It's
Dachas.
Yeah, my nickname back in Serbia, but when you start, going internationally, people are more confused with my nickname than my real name. And they're also asking me like, oh, Darko, cool nickname. What's your real name? I'm like,
Well, Donnie Darko, like this.
Yes.
My real name. Anyways, but you're part of Carnival of Flesh. And today we're going to talk a bit more about that project. And because I know the band has gone through many stages as well throughout the years. So curious to know more about that. But let's first start with you and your introduction. Now, who are you? What do you do in the band?
Yeah. So, hi, I'm Dachas. I'm originally from Serbia, but living in Netherlands for the last 11 years. I'm co-founder slash vocals slash lyrics slash manager of Carnival of Flesh. And yes, my professional management career is seeping into my band as well. We started the band, a long time ago, back in 2002 as a high school project. At that time, we were very optimistic in kind of reshaping the black metal scene of Serbia, which at the time, it had some nice parts, but it was kind of traditionally rooted. And we were at the point of, listening to a lot of symphonic black metal coming from France, from Scandinavia as well, and being like, well, it does not always have to be about Satanism. It does not always have to be the, raw anti-religion part. So we wanted to find a deeper meaning closer to us, not devaluing the meaning that other bands are following, but it did not resonate with us. But as you might imagine, a couple of high school kids trying to put serious bands together, that didn't really work out. So we had many, many personnel changes over time. And I think that it was 2008 when we officially gave up. And 2012, I moved to Netherlands. And as it goes, when you have a nice, cozy, worry-free life, you get a little bit bored. Around 2013, I started reaching out to Dam, who is the co-founder slash keyboard player, and main composer for the first album, and also one of the main composers for the second album. I started just with, what if we recorded that demo that we never did? To which he used the phrase which challenges people from Balkans. Yes, that would be great, but I don't see that happening. Challenge accepted.
I definitely resonate with that, yes, coming from the Balkans as well, yes.
Yeah. So 2013, we looked at the songs that we had written a long, long time ago, looked at where they are, how we can do something with that. We selected six of them, reshaped them a little bit, because some of them were written in very early stages of the band, so like 2004, some were written closer to the official breaking point of 2008. But we also needed to update them a little bit to keep with the original idea of we want to tell a story, we want to find something that resonates with us. And then in 2014, we started off kind of as a studio project, getting some of the best people we could find back in Serbia, finding really impressive drummer, really impressive producer who really bought into the story. He really lived through our super terrible demo, and he really heard the potential of that super terrible demo.
Yeah.
And then as we were recording our in our brains demo, it started sounding like proper music. And as we were driving back from a very intense week in the studio, because as you might imagine, me living in the Netherlands, them being at that time in Serbia, and yeah. other musicians who were at that time session being in Serbia. I had to take some holidays, and then it was really, you know, none of that romantic. We're in a studio creating things together, but like, no,
never is.
You know, it's a work engagement, you know? So after that very intense week, the producer just gave us the first, not even like a mix, but you know, just here's from one of the songs, here's just like all the layers, one on top of each other without anything done to them. And we were driving back from Kragujevac, a city in like mid-south Serbia, back to Belgrade, where we're from, listening to that and being like, well, fuck, now we have to continue with this because this sounds so much better than what we
Now you gotta make something really out of it.
So those were the starts, and then took us a few years to get into a full live setup. So our first gig was in 2016, and that ended up surprisingly well. And I mean, if you imagine that, you know, like it started as a high school band that was never successful. And then, you know, studio project, you have a lot of room to err in studio, but then doing the actual first gig, where of course we wanted to go over the top, so that there were maybe more things that we did that we potentially should not have for the first gig, but it all added to that feeling of, so I'm not sure how it is in Bulgaria, but in Serbia one of the best reviews you can get is they sound like a foreign band.
Well, you can imagine. Yeah, I think it's exactly the same for Bulgarian, especially when it's about a scene that we don't really have, let's say, in a particular genre. Like metal scene in Bulgaria is also quite, let's say, going into the classic types, like heavy metal, that's it, but not really venturing in other styles. So
We were pretty proud to have received the top praise possible. And that, you know, got us rolling again. So very quickly, well, very quickly after, it was actually a year and a half later, we did a European tour. It was 16 days, 14 cities. It was quite intense. And it was one of the, you know, like most beautiful experiences that, that I had. So as you might imagine, you know, it was not... on the level of, I don't know, Dimmu Borgir, Satyricon, whatever, you know, those A-level bands. It was a lot of small venues, it was a lot of bad promotion, but it was also a lot of learnings. One thing that I really, really enjoyed, the atmosphere that we had in the van. So like there was no bickering, no fighting, no egos. We were just all in it like, yeah, we're traveling, we're playing, if we're playing for 100 people or if we're playing for one person, they're gonna get the same show. And it was it was really really fulfilling, you know, just the musical and lyrical part of it. For us, you know, the visual identity behind it is very important. So I worked with our original designer and cover artist.
I have to say, I was going to mention that because I really, really like the cover art.
Thank you.
I was going to ask you like about the logo and the cover art of Anthems of Extinction. It's beautiful.
Yes. So the cover art was also a project which we worked on. I don't remember how many months, but it started with me just reaching out to our designer, Stefan, and being like, Gabe, what's your availability? When can you start working on this? I don't have strict deadlines for you, but, you know, here's the music, here are the lyrics, and, you know, let's start brainstorming on it. And I, funnily enough, sent those messages just before Christmas and New Year's, expecting that he will tell me like, see you in February or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
The dude was like, oh, well, I have time off work. I'm going to start tomorrow. Okay. And because my timelines were like, I expect to get something back from him by end of April or something like that, starting in December and working until, I don't know if it was April, May, where it was, but it was a few months. meant that we had a lot more time to be creative and to explore much further than just the cover art, because I don't know if you looked through the booklet as well, but you know, for every song we created a conceptual visual, which is something that we did before as well. So for the first album, we also did like a set of tarot cards, one for each song. And so here we didn't want to repeat ourselves, but also we wanted
it's different.
So I know that this was a little bit extensive.
No, I like, I'm really glad you did that actually, because it gives, I feel like a lot of people don't really know, even if they're fans of black metal, okay, in general, they don't really know about the Serbian scene, but that's also why we're doing this here. Maybe you are the Serbian scene, I mean, in a sense, you know, with black metal, and especially symphonic black metal, because it's a bit different. But thank you for the overview. I have a lot of things I want to ask, but let me see, I'll rewind to when you were talking about the story, because you mentioned that a couple of times. So I know in the social, at least what I saw was that you mentioned you're eco-activists, something like that, right? So is that the story that you're talking about, like general theme, or is there something else?
Anthems of Extinction is really like eco-activist, social, political album. And how did we get there? So for us, it was always important to tell a story. And not to have, you know, just, you know, a bunch of good riffs, a bunch of, you know, lyrics that go nicely with those good riffs, and then whatever happens, right? Again, please take everything that I'm saying with the utmost respect possible. I do not want people to feel badly if that's the type of music they like or like making. That is absolutely okay. But
just not yours.
So our take was always a little bit more theatrical, a little bit more over the top. And then, sure, are we at the level where we can confidently say that we are over the top? Possibly not, because, I mean, with all the Alice Coopers and Wasps and whatever of the world, and
bloody stuff on stage,
So, like, we are infants in comparison to that. But when we looked at the type of music that we listened to, that we really, really appreciated, it was always story-based. So from classics like King Diamond, where each album is a beautiful horror story, to Edge of Sanity's Crimson, you know, like where for us it was a massive mind blow that a full album is one song of 45 minutes. And sure, it was a musical expression and stuff like that. And yes, it's an album. It has different songs in it, but it's one song and stuff like that. So with that kind of background, the first album was Stories from a Fallen World, which was more magical, more, let's say, let's have this horror story, which is not fully detached from reality, but it is a little bit more detached. So, you know, the underlying meaning was a little bit under the wraps, if you will. So, you know, you can take it on the face
value. You can interpret,
You can take it on the face value. You can be like, oh yeah, it's a nice horror story and be done with it. You can clearly go digging a little bit deeper and get to the story of, you know, like, be careful what you wish for, and, you know, dealing with consequences of our desires, of our, you know, appetites, if you will. And then as we were writing the second album, we were, again, trying to stay with the storytelling moment, because that is kind of the core of our band. But then going back to what I said about Satanism and finding our identity, so I was kind of deconstructing what is the story behind Satanism and what is the story behind that particular vibe of metal. And it really made sense, because it came from a place of oppression, a place where people were not comfortable with religion being shoved down their throats and whatnot. And then we reflected on, there was a period in our upbringing where we felt like too big presence of religion in Serbia, the kind of mafia aspect of organized religion in Serbia, and that even the our religious friends that we really hold dear distance themselves from the Orthodox Church because of those parts. But then we also reflected on how small of an impact it had on our adult lives. And also for me living in Netherlands, I mean, yes, religion is present in Netherlands, but at a very, I don't want to say irrelevant aspect, because that's not entirely true, but when you live in Amsterdam, you tend not even to see it, right? And we looked at what are the things really pressing us as the adults that we are today. And that was this, as the first song says, angst of where is our planet heading to? Where is the society heading to? And it is a little bit of, I don't want to say any sort of manifesto, but it is kind of like a recipe book, how to successfully extinct, to get civilization extinct, how to successfully, through all the different flavors, just destroy everything that we were building, and how to embrace the insanity. And of course, you can just take it on the face value where we're inviting you to do those things. But actually what we are trying to do with lyrics like that is to get people to think and to
raise the awareness,
to see, you know, like what is their place in all of that? Are they comfortable with that place? Do they want to be part of it? And then, sure, we're not going to be out there starting a revolution or anything like that, but we just want people to think. And if people are not comfortable thinking while they're listening to our music, well, then at least we hope they have a good time enjoying our music.
Yeah, in both scenarios, there is something to be gained, but it depends on the listener too. And I thought when I looked through a tropical plunder, it was, right? I was almost saying Tropical Thunder because it really goes together, but Tropical Plunder. First, the title itself is interesting, an interesting choice, but also I really enjoyed the visual aspect to it because you have the video on YouTube, so you can freely, anyone can freely check it. I was wondering a couple of things. So first, the visual aspect, whose idea was it and what exactly do you represent, if you even want that to be clear out there for people, or do you want it to be more like, okay, we leave it up to you?
Yeah, no. So I'm happy to scratch a little bit on it. So first about the name, it is twofold. So it is, again, what it says on the tin. So how we're plundering resources, and it has a little bit of a tropical theme because it's talking about rising sea levels and whatnot.
Yeah.
But it also has that part of a black metal band is not allowed to use words tropical.
Yeah, that was also going to be my thing. I loved it that it's not the cliche because, okay, I just upon looking at the title, I wouldn't have imagined, okay, that's a black metal sound. No, I'm not going to be expecting that. So good job.
Yes, and Tropical Plunder as a song is a very dividing song on our latest album. So we absolutely love it. And that's also why we chose that to be the first video single. It is maybe the most unusual thing we've done with the, you know, orchestrations in the beginning and the whole progression of the song. But it is like, all of us really absolutely adore this song. So you're not supposed to have a favorite child. We do. It's Tropical Plunder. But some people did not appreciate the diversity of the song or the unusualness of the song or whatever you want to call it, because there were some reviewers saying, you know, the band is trying to achieve the sound they're not comfortable with and whatnot. While I can appreciate that, because maybe this is not our default sound, we also don't really want to be a band that has like overly specific sound. And I know that we do have a sound. We clearly do have a sound.
Yeah.
Some people might even debate if that sound is natively ours or if we, you know, are we appropriated other people's sound, whatever. But at least we find ourselves in a certain spectrum, but we find that spectrum to be very broad. But anyway, so that's about the initial story about the song. But the video, it was a bit scrappy project, if I'm honest. Again, with the whole I'm living in one country, the rest of the band is in another country, we got in touch with a really good friend and well, nowadays professional filmmaker, but at the time not really professional filmmaker. Igor Jimistanic, who is a very active on Serbian metal scene. He had a couple of his own bands like Superhammer and a couple other projects. We were essentially reaching out to a number of videographers in Serbia, kind of the same like initially when we were reaching out to producers to find somebody who would understand what we're trying to achieve and to work with us on that. So we found Jimmy he clearly knew us from before. The two of us knew each other from internet presence because both of us were at certain point in time very present in Serbian metal or Yugoslav metal at the time even, so whatever. He was very, very happy to start working with us. Then we started just bouncing some ideas on what we want to capture in the video. Again, the lyrics are so packed with symbolism. So I actually, you know, wrote a little dissertation where I'm taking each two lines and writing a small story next to it. I'm happy to share that with you. Publicly share that, but
I would be curious to have it.
There is again a lot more happening in that song than what's the face value, and we wanted to just give a little bit of the complete vibe of that story in the video. Let's say the smallest digestion that we could do is this part of humanity and modern industrial humanity oppressing nature through very, you know, symbolic interaction of me representing humanity, our very close friend Ljubica being initially nature, then, you know, succumbing to our influence. So this is just like a thin line out of the full story, but we didn't, with the first video, we didn't really want to overwhelm. We are doing that with our second video, which is going to come 1st of January.
When? 1st of January?
Yes.
Wow, okay, Happy New Year next year. We'll remember that date.
the first video is more ambiental, kind of artistic, if you will. The second one is a lot more story driven and a lot more. So while the first one was calmer with slower cuts, the second one is going to be a little bit more intense with a little bit quicker cuts. And it is also for a song which is kind of diametrically opposite from Tropical Plunder, where again, Tropical Plunder is very symphonic. Which is the next music video, starts literally in a good old black metal fashion with a punch to your face. The whole song is pretty high tempo. So there we decided to do, again, the opposite and see also a little bit like how people react to that. Do they like that style as well? Because in that one, we really tried to capture a lot of what's happening in the lyrics to capture also on screen, and to also add a little bit of those hidden layers on the screen as well. And maybe we were successful in achieving that, maybe not. We will see. That was the experimentation with that one as well. And maybe to go a little bit back to Tropical Plunder once again, that was our first official music video. Before that, we were just releasing a couple of, from gigs recordings.
Yeah.
But this one somehow got onto the Serbian National Music Channel's Song of the Month voting.
Mm-hmm.
We have no clue, because like we didn't initiate it. Normally bands send stuff to the media. We had very weak support at that time from Serbian media, and we were like, okay, this happened. So we just shared it, like, you know, people, you can go voting. It's funny seeing, you know, symphonic black metal and then kind of power pop and then pop thing. And it's like, it's all mixed together. And like,
sure. Such a mishmash, you're there, yeah.
And we expected to be somewhere close to the bottom of the voting list. And then we won. And we were like, absolutely flabbergasted. So absolutely flabbergasted. And it was a really nice win because that happened in a period where, so we recorded the album, we were looking for publishers, we did a gig on a festival in Serbia, and after the gig, we got the results of the vote, and we won. And it was like, okay, we had a fantastic gig.
What a timing. Yeah.
We had this, great. And then the funniest of the funny things was that that video, because it won, it got aired on Serbian national television.
I read about that, yeah.
Yeah, so like I was here in the Netherlands, you know, subscribing to one of those internet TV things just to be able to watch my music video on Serbian national television, because it just didn't add together, right?
So, it's super surreal. And I guess when you're also not in the location, so not in Serbia in that moment, you kind of feel even more detached in a way. You're not really detached. Of course, you're, oh, you know, it's my band, it's happening. But a bit more like an observer of the observer, if you know what I mean. Very
absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And also with what you said, like a few moments ago, that, you know, metal and black metal and symphonic black metal are not really recognized in Bulgaria. In Serbia, like, let's say either the same, maybe a little bit more, but mainstream media and governmental national television, like,
it doesn't happen that they
just doesn't happen. So that was the most amazing thing that happened to us. We also were, you know, credits where credits due, we were featured on Croatian music television. That was much easier because just they have a healthy music program and they play everything from the region. You know, that's I respect, but I'm not surprised with, but this was completely, you know, blowing things out of the water. And ironically enough, so our next music video, The One, is dedicated to all the great leaders in the world, you know, from Boris Johnson to Kim Jong-un to Donald Trump to our beloved president in Serbia. To use the politically correct terms, so it is kind of an instruction manual on how to rule your people and drive them into the ground and remove all the freedoms from them. If we manage to get that one on national television, I'm done. Like,
wow, freedom exists somehow, you know, right? You by now I'm getting this picture in my head. You like doing the reverse psychology on people with your themes and topics. Yeah,
yes.
That's lovely. But the contrast is quite good then. So Tropical Plunder being, you know, like a bit more like, it's very melodic, I would say. It's really melodic. Like the symphonic elements just overthrowing the rest. And then you have the really, where maybe real, very classic black metal fans will be more happy with, if maybe I'm a bit biased, but yeah, that's how I see it, that maybe they will be like, okay, yes, that's what we're looking for. Because at least I know a couple artists that have this distinction, that they experience it, but do you feel the same? So your image, or let's say a mask that you have while you're performing or within the music, is that actually a mask for you, or do you feel it really is you as a person and represents you as well? Or is there a clear distinction?
That is a really, really good question. And that is a really tough one as well, because it also changes over time. So I was asked a similar question back in the time of our first album. And there I had a little bit of kind of split of what songs were more personal and what songs were more kind of observational, where it was like social commentary, but for some it was kind of putting myself really into the song. So that on the first album I had more of that cut. On this album, and again, so this is not directly answering your question because I'm now first taking a stab at the lyrics, but then we're going to get to the stage persona as well. So the lyrics of the second album, even though they're social commentary, there is, I would say, a lot more personal notes in that, because a lot of it is based on firsthand experiences and firsthand emotions and you know, firsthand observations. I would say that definitely identify a lot more with the lyrics of the new album, which, you know, is good, because if it was the other way around, we should reconsider our career. That's on the lyrical aspect. On the performing aspect, I don't know, because there is a little bit of a difference of the person that's there on the stage and the person that that I am in a private and professional life. Usually what I heard from my friends, you know, like observing the two people, is that they see a big difference, that, you know, the person on the stage is, you know, kind of larger than life and all of that, which is part of the theatrical approach that, that we have. And, you know, like how we understand the, you know, the music and performance and performative arts altogether. But then also there is an incredibly big part of the actual who I am in all of that, because, for example, like the set pieces, the how we present ourselves, I spend a lot of time thinking about that and planning that up to the point where for this music video, the second one that we're doing, I spent a lot of time making the props themselves, because it was like, one example is I needed an ancient book, and I was like, okay, how do I achieve that? And especially with being in Netherlands, shooting Serbia, what can I do remotely? What, you know, can I expect people to do for me over there and stuff like that? And as you might imagine, later in that day of brainstorming, my girlfriend just came over and said, like, are you really looking how to do hand bookbinding? I was like, maybe. And that was my weekend project, right? And so there is a little bit of that perfectionist person in there. And I would try to steer away from the perfectionist label, because you know, professionally I deal with managing people and also, you know, building things and whatnot, where 80% is usually more than what you need. So usually you need like 57% and not even 80%. So I'm trying to balance that, because clearly, you know, I want to give the best show to everybody, to give the best experience, to give them something they're gonna remember. But then also I have to tone it down with a little bit of realism of, we do not have an infinite budget. We do not have a huge marketing company backing us. And then what is realistic that we can do? So those parts are very much ingrained in this persona that you see on the stage. And then, you know, if we take like two steps back, what I said with, you know, this person on stage is larger than life and whatnot, and some of my friends see a big difference in that. If I compare with this professional note that I mentioned, in all of my previous companies, people saw those two people, so those two personas in my professional behavior as well. Because, you know, when I need to represent the people, or when I need to speak on a conference or whatever, I still have this kind of entertainer persona, this very vocal persona, but then I'm also going to be the person on the other side who's quiet and listening to your problems and not speaking over you, I'm aware that today I'm talking a lot, but you're interviewing me.
No, but, that's the circumstance, you know, the circumstances really make for the behavior a lot of times. And if you are a sensitive person who actually has some empathy and can read the room, then I would think it's just more than normal to have this kind of attitude and to adapt slightly. So,
yeah, and it is very important. It is a funny thing, you know, and I apologize a little bit for pulling a lot of this professional stuff into it, but, at some point in your managerial career, you get all kinds of education on communication and, like you said, you know, reading the room, optimizing your communication style and whatnot. And those are the things that do not apply just to professional environment. They apply to human interaction. And it's, you know, to a certain extent sad that we're not taught that earlier in our lives, but you know, if you decide to go on this career path and you get to a certain level, then you get some of that training. Also, sad and very troublesome that a lot of my peers who are supposed to, you know, really max out on those skills don't take them very seriously because you know, I didn't become a manager because of my soft skills. I became because I'm the best in what I do. Of course, I'm making it more graphical than it is, but
But to illustrate a point, I get what you mean.
So, it is interesting.
Interesting for sure. Yeah, it's an interesting question also for me to use that word back because I like asking it to people because I feel like. Oftentimes, there is this understanding that when you're an artist, you have to be in a certain way, you're in a certain way on stage, you have to behave, you have to be the extrovert type, and you really, you know, in order to perform, you have to be like this. And I also often get this question back from people, but why do you say you're an introvert because you perform on stage? So that's kind of, how do you reconcile this? But it's not necessarily, I at least don't see it as a conflict. It's a different setting. It's a different circumstance. It's a different part. It calls for a different part of you. And I just always am so curious to how other people that are performing or in some way creatives, how they perceive it, how it is for them. Of course, I know some people that have a very thin distinction, so it's almost you can't even notice it. They are exactly the same person all around, on stage, personal, whatever. But most of the people I know and my friends that are creative are the opposite. So they reveal a different part. I'm curious if you have any dates planned for touring, performing, and whatnot.
We were supposed to do a small tour in Serbia end of last year because we released the album in November. The plan was let's do album promotion tour in December.
Yeah.
And so Serbia at that time was fairly open. And then just as we started talking to the venues, they started introducing QR codes. Unlike Netherlands, where people are more comfortable with that, in Serbia, that just meant nobody's going anywhere.
Same in Bulgaria.
We postponed it until spring this year. Around that time, our long-term drummer decided to leave us just before we started choosing the dates. Then we were scrambling to find replacement. As you might imagine, finding a replacement, somebody who needs to learn like 1.5 albums overnight, does not happen overnight. So we think we found our new drummer. And when we were shooting the new music video, we also met with him in person, did a little bit of a rehearsal session that sounded the way it should sound. So that gave us some confidence. But then we were again getting to this, it's end of the year, we need to practice more in this new setup because to roll a little bit back with this multi-geo setup, you don't get the luxury of your usual rehearsals once a week or twice a week or whatever.
Yeah.
So it was really the very professional touring kind of setup where everybody rehearses in their own capacity and then we just have sometimes even one general rehearsal, and if we're lucky, like two or did we ever have three? But
that's pushing it now.
Yeah. So the last time we played, we had the general rehearsal in the morning of the day that we played the festival. That was cutting in really close. But again, it's the group of people that's very experienced, the group of people mm-hmm. that worked together a lot. We, even though we were playing new songs on that festival, it was easy because we already, you know, knew how all of it works. When you change a few people in a band, then it becomes more complicated. So that's why now we're hopefully aiming for spring next year as well. I will not commit.
Let's not jinx it, the goal.
We know what happened last time, but so again, why spring? Just to be as corona-proof as possible, because if we have new set of restrictions that we could play outdoors where it would be a little bit more loose. But mm-hmm. that is smaller factor now, if I'm completely honest. The bigger factor is just getting the new lineup to the level that we want to be again to perform.
Yeah, improv. That was about your rebellion, let's say, because usually in metal or these harsher styles, there is always some kind of internal rebellion. You talked about the story, mm-hmm. so the echo side of it, so on. But is there personally for you some kind of rebellion that makes you or urges you to create music that's more personal to you and you can't drop the music because of it?
So that is a good one, because it is maybe a bit hard for me to detach the two, mm-hmm. because I was thinking many times of what we're doing with Carnival. I love it. I invested so much of myself in it. But does it make sense with the different countries, with all the logistical problems, with us getting older, having families, kids, whatnot, and all that goes with that? Where I wanted to kind of try, can I have a different band? Can I do something that's completely here, that's completely not related to Carnival, and then mm-hmm. Have two bands or whatever? And I realized that Carnival is really a big part of who I am, and a big part of me is in there. And that might be good, might be bad, but it's creating a hard, hard time for me to detach and to say this is our message as a group. Yeah. And this is me in my internal rhythm, right? Mm-hmm. So from that kind of aspect, there is a very tight bond there. And for the part of is there something constantly pushing me towards music, there definitely is, because also how we rebooted Carnival was my life became so normal and so boring that I just missed that creative outlet. And so maybe that is also kind of the duality of my persona, where what I said, I'm very technical, systematic, whatnot. But then also my creative side is hello, I'm present as well.
I'm here as well. Yeah. Give me some attention.
Exactly. It is interesting because music is not my only creative outlet. So I'm really into photography. There were periods of time where I was dedicating a stupid amount of time into my hobby because, I never earned any money of it. While people were but your photography is really professional grade. I'm but I'm not doing it for that. I have a profession and it's well paid and I don't want to, switch to this. So this was really kind of me pouring my creative soul out into photography. And what I realized is that, we don't have unlimited amount of time. So my creative outlet sometimes is photography, sometimes is Carnival. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's something weird like building a book by hand for Carnival.
Book binding, wow, yeah.
there was always this creative part. And maybe, if I do a little bit more introspection. So at the beginning of my professional career, I was building websites, which meant next to the coding part, which was, you know, like the part that I really enjoyed and where my profession is, it came with the design part, because when you're, you know, a small nobody from Serbia, you cannot just be like, I'm the best coder, find your designer. So my creative outlet was building those designs. And then over time, as I went into more professional software engineering careers, that design part kind of disappeared, but it was all with me in some capacity. But then I think that because I didn't have that level of creativity that I apparently need, then the band came back. And then when the band was again on hold because, you know, we were in between albums or whatever, then it was like, okay, let's do photography now. And I guess that is just how I try to balance the left and right side of my brain.
I was listening to you and I was thinking the same thing, like, okay, that's a good balance between both sides, both hemispheres. Good job. And I guess, you know, the versatility of it also helps you, because when you're a creative person, sometimes it can, even what you're creative with can become boring to you, or you might not find the same enthusiasm that you had unless you spice it up with something else. Either you spice it up or you just find a different niche. And like with you with the photography, then some people do the cooking as well. You also do cooking.
Yes.
All right. Then, yeah, so different versatile ways to express it.
No, but you really hit the nail on the head, because also what was happening with my photography was that I was really reaching those levels where it should be professional, where one set of people were asking, like, why is it not in a gallery? And the other set of people was asking, why are you not making money of this? Where I was like, but it's my creative outlet. But then... high standards for everything in life, which we covered already.
Perfectionism.
Let's not call it that.
Okay, that's a negative connotation. Sorry, it's not.
Yeah, but they're also creating this pressure, as you said, that's why now if I travel somewhere and I take my, a high-end camera with, and I take photos, it's going to take years before those photos are published, because I cannot just, you know, publish snaps like normal people who share with their families, like, look, I saw this thing. I'm like, no, I want you to experience this thing the way I experienced it, or the way I'm experiencing it now, like 4 years later when I'm editing the photos.
Would you say to musicians that are trying to make it, not necessarily make it big or anything like that, but to make it with the concept that they want to get out in the world? What kind of advice would you give them? Something that helped you?
Yeah. So it is maybe going to sound a little bit off the shelf and maybe going to sound a little bit generic, but it is applicable to... music, to your professional life, and to your personal life. The first thing is understand who you are, understand yourself, and understand what you're trying to achieve. Why are you trying to achieve that?
Mm-hmm.
What is your motivation? And there are no wrong answers. So I really don't like if somebody says like, oh yeah, they're just chasing fame and money. Why is that wrong? Like if that is what they want to achieve, that is perfectly fine. If somebody is constantly playing and they never want to play live, and somebody says, why do you even bother playing? That does not align with your vision, but maybe that's their vision. Maybe that's, you know, what they need. So it is very, very important to understand first what you need, and are you on a good path to achieve that thing that you need and that makes you happy. And I know that happy is a loaded term, but that makes you satisfied, that gives you something back for all the effort that you're putting into it. Effort is also a very big keyword. So yes, talent is important, but it's X percent talent and Y percent persistence and all of that.
Seems to be true. Yeah.
And it's true. I mean, so on one hand, I can say that, my composing skills are bad because I'm not as talented as Dam or Tarkalion. But it is partially true. It's also partially that I did not invest 20 years of my life filling every single empty spot with music, composing music, etc. I filled it with writing code. And am I a talented coder? Sure, maybe my brain is 1% more mathematical than some other person's, but that's 1%. That's not everything.
Around. Most of all, you've put the work into it.
Yes. So. I mean, the very, very annoying, did you put 10,000 hours into it? I don't know what's the number of hours, right? But it also.
But it's a lot.
It is a lot. And it's also, does that process make you happy? And again, yeah. Let's not chase happiness, but does it give you back
what? Meaning, purpose?
Yes, yes. So yeah. Does it give you something back? And is that worth it? And so the worth is also a very loaded term because when is it really worth it?
Up to you to
yes
discover, yeah.
And then, so that is very individualistic start, but very important to start at that place. And then you start asking those questions in a wider audience, which is your band, assuming that you're not one person.
One man, one person.
And I mean, if you are, that's good. But if you have people around you, it's very important to understand what are your roles and responsibilities and what are your shared goals and are your individual goals aligned
compatible.
In that shared goal? Are the other people there to actively participate in that shared goal? I'm going to give an example of our rhythm guitarist who came and said, look, I'm going to play with you always, but do not expect me to be part of creative process. I don't have the time. I don't have the capacity for that. I love the music he plays, you know, impeccably. And like, those are my boundaries.
Yeah.
And I thanked him from the bottom of my heart because that is the best thing somebody can do. Set very clear boundaries, set very clear participation rules, and you know how to play with that. And then you don't have the disappointments of we are doing this together and then one person does it, the other doesn't. And
So mismatched expectations, that happens all the time.
Yes. And it is very important. And again, this translates to anything you do in life. It's very important to have, and I know it sounds bureaucratic, but to have a contract with the people around you, just out of respect and out of mutual satisfaction. And to enjoy yourself while you're doing that, because after all, it's supposedly creating something that's beautiful, as grotesque, as abstract, as whatever it might be. It is your personal output. It is there to make other people happy, sad, think or not think, or relax, or whatever. But
touch them in some way, yeah.
Yes.
Affect them.
Again, I just realized that I made it sound as you have to do it for other people with my last statement, because you're touching other people. You can also do it for yourself. I think that the context of the question was in performing and playing for others. And then I think you're doing it for the others as well.
Yes, yeah. And I think like anyone who listens to you would understand it correctly. Both are intertwined anyway, because it's the nature of the performing. That it can't be only for you, but it's always for the people that receive it as well. So it's both. But that's really insightful. And I hope people that are starting out or that have had a bit of years behind their back playing can take something out of this, and yeah, I find it insightful, so thanks very much for that. And tell us, of course, where we can support you best, so anyone who's listening to us or wants to now get into Carnival of Flesh and what you're about, so where can they find you?
Yeah, so we're digital like everybody else. You can find us on everything. You can go on carnivalofflesh.com, or if that's too long for you to type, you can type flesh.is. You know, if you want to see the Tropical Plunder video, flash.is/tropical.
See it.
So
look at it. Yeah.
If you want to listen to our latest album, Anthems of Extinction, flash is anthems. So, you know, it's easy, it's catchy. Even though we're digital, we would invite you to invest in our merch, not because we need to pay the bills, because that's not going to happen anytime soon, but we would like you to experience the physical manifestation of our new album, which is a nice little book with I forget how many pages of artwork, and we really take that part seriously as well. That is where you can start. If you're in Serbia and listening to this, hello, how are we doing? I hope that you'll be able to see us live in a couple of months. If you're in Europe, reach out, because we definitely want to do another European tour. And if you are outside of Europe and you would like to see us touring, I hope you're a tour organizer, because we do have a van, but van does not go into United States, so...
Some support needed, people, yeah, please offer that. Thanks so much again, Darko, for this conversation. Thanks for anyone who was listening to us and tuned to this episode. That's it for the Stellar Sound podcast today, and I see tonight, because now it's already dark. That's the type of season we're in. Anyways, so I hope to see you all, guys, and hear your feedback very soon. And for you, Darko, we're going to reconnect when you've toured, because I want to get the impression after on the journey.
Absolutely.